The tragedy that struck one Jacksonville family sparks powerful calls for change. An important conversation coming up about mental illness this morning as we take your calls. Good Tuesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We're always live on the radio at 9 and now subscribe to that daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, why calls for reform are growing when it comes to Florida's flawed approach to caring for our mentally ill. We want your calls right now. Get on the line with your thoughts at 549-2937. Also coming up, our book club blogger Stacey Goldring looks at your favorite blicks. That's books that have been made into movies. And then later, all about the Jacksonville Children's Commission's after-school programs across the city, just in time for your kids going back to class. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, the shocking gaps in Florida's mental health system of care are laid bare in one Jacksonville family's harrowing story. It was detailed in a compelling piece over the weekend in the Florida Times-Union. The story of the Hereford family will break your heart, but it will also motivate you to demand change when it comes to how we care for those around us suffering from mental illness. We're pleased to welcome Derek Gilliam, reporter for the Florida Times-Union in studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. Mental health reform advocate Jonathan Hereford also with us.
Good morning.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. And Denise Marzullo, CEO of Mental Health America of Northeast Florida.
Good morning.
And we're already getting your calls. Did you read the piece on the TU this weekend about the Hereford family? When it comes to how Florida cares or doesn't care properly for the mentally ill, what are your questions? What are your thoughts? Get on the line now. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or just go to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet us. You can also weigh in on our Facebook page. Derek, let's begin with you. In a moment, Jonathan will tell the story of his family. But first, this was a front page piece in the Sunday paper, I believe. What motivated you to delve into this issue?
Well, I'm a crime reporter for the Florida Times-Union, and I often, mental health often crosses that path, and I just thought it was important to show just kind of the way the systems interact, and there really is no interaction. The mental health system basically is the criminal justice system, and I believe, a spotlight needs to be shown on that.
And you chose the Hereford family. Jonathan, your younger brother, Sean, currently in a mental health facility in Chattahoochee. This came after years of struggle and worry and heartache, culminating in the killing of your own mother. Can you tell us, for those who haven't followed the Hereford story, how this all began with your brother, Sean, and what finally brought it to a crisis point?
Okay. So he struggled a long time. He was about 18, 19 when he first started having his episodes. And throughout those years, my family advocated for him. They would start with treatment centers. And just like Derek said, the police get involved with Baker Acts and whatnot, and I believe the jail has still the largest amount of bed space for the mentally ill. So if that doesn't tell you something right there. But with the current Baker Act and somebody being held for 72 hours, I mean, I could talk for forever about all of this, but definitely with the releasing into homeless shelters and being forced to being homeless and with no continuum of care and just nothing in place solid that can help family members that really want to help the mentally ill. So it's we found our hands tied, my mother and I, a lot by the legal system and trying to advocate for my brother and a lot of issues with HIPAA and just it's a pain, it's a struggle, and he's not doing well.
And a needless tragedy, your mother died, and that didn't have to happen, you believe, if Sean had received the appropriate care.
Wholeheartedly. After going through the different facilities and going down to the courthouse and bouncing around and finally finding what the right and correct thing to do, beginning of October, unfortunately, I went down to the courthouse and filed a petition to have him officially Baker acted for the umpteenth thousandth time and have another evaluation done. And later on that month, let alone did we know that my mother wouldn't be with us anymore. So it's been tough.
Denise Marzullo, CEO of Mental Health America of Northeast Florida. If someone's mentally ill and is a danger to themselves or others, they can only be held under the Baker Act for 3 days. And that, it, and we saw this happen time and again with Sean Hereford. He was held for 3 days, released. Held for 3 days, released.
That's correct. The treatment centers can petition the courts if they feel like the person hasn't gotten stable in those 3 days to stay a little bit longer. However, most people do get stabilized in those 3 days. The problem is, and Sean articulated it, Jonathan articulated it perfectly, the continuum of care. So the Baker Act system holds people for 3 days, 72 hours. However, there's not the follow-up that we need. There's not that continuum of care, the care coordination that is so critical. Otherwise, we're stabilizing, and then most times the person ends up back on the streets, either committing a crime or getting Baker Acted again.
We'll go to your calls on this topic in a moment at 549-2937. Derek Gilliam, I'm quoting from your article, police took Sean to a psychiatric hospital 34 times. They booked him into the Duval County Jail 23 times, but the charges were so minor, they had to set him free every time. The jail is our primary mental health facility in this county, and that's how it is throughout the state. Your reporting revealed that there have been efforts in the legislature to try to do something about this, but because the session ended early, abruptly, over a fight over Medicaid, there was no progress, correct?
There were some bills that passed, but none of the ones that would have affected system-wide change. Charles McBurney, U.S. Representative Charles McBurney's bill, would have codified or standardized the mental health courts throughout the state. I don't believe every county even has a mental health court. We have a mental health court, and Denise could tell you more about it, but I believe there's only about 30 people in it, and it's voluntary, and most of these people who are getting arrested, most mental health patients are not violent. They are actually largely more often the victim of crimes than they are the perpetrator, at least according to several of my sources, including the Miami judge. So while they are hitting the criminal justice system, they're hitting it for trespassing charges, which honestly, that's a very minor crime. But they just continuously are being arrested on these minor crimes, largely found in mental health crisis.
So, Jonathan, in your view, what's the most important change legislators should be looking at making in this state when it comes to a system of care for those with mental illness, such as your brother, Sean?
Really need to talk to the experts and talk with family, and just like we're doing today. It's been a tough cycle for everything, and as we've experienced everything from the courts to the jail to the police involvement, there's problems with every aspect. So it does take some more research. And just like Derek said earlier with Charles McBurney, there are things in place, but obviously it's going to need funding to get going.
Is that the biggest piece, Denise, better funding? Or is it a better coordination of the pieces that are already in place? Or is it both?
It's both. It's a combination. So just like the JCCI inquiry here in Jacksonville brought together community leaders, mental health stakeholders, families, a lot of solutions have been designed, a lot of gaps identified, and programs that could be put in place, services that could be better coordinated. Those types of collaborative efforts are happening across the state. So there's a lot of pilot programs, a lot of services that people want to do that the mental health professionals really feel like they have a solution for. It is going to take funding. But a lot, it's not just, I think the article mentioned, Judge Lifman said, you can't just throw $200 million into the current system. And that's absolutely correct. The current system, even with $200 million, wouldn't fix a majority of the problem. So it's about providing funding and following up with the experts to make sure that the funding is going to a lot of the issues that families are facing.
Mm-hmm. Derek Gilliam.
What Lifman had said then, Lifman is actually his name, what Lifman said was if he had $1 billion, it would actually only bring Florida up to 32nd in funding. And if he had $1 billion, he wouldn't even give it to the current system because it would be a waste of money, basically.
He'd start over with a better system.
Right.
Well, lots of calls, as we discuss, calls for reform of the state system of care when it comes to the mentally ill. Did you read the piece about Jonathan and Sean Hereford in the Times Union over the weekend? That's what we're discussing right now What are your calls and questions? 549-2937 to join us. Jimmy in Jacksonville. Hey, Jimmy. Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I've actually kind of just thought that what could maybe be a little bit more, I don't know, proactive is to kind of start from the bottom up. As a society, we kind of need to change the way we look at mental health. It has such a negative stigma. You know, if you tell somebody that you're seeing a psychologist, half the room's looking at you like you're, quote, crazy. The other half the room is looking at you as if you're perfectly normal. We don't put any kind of shame on people because they go to a gym and get a personal trainer, right? You know, we think that that's a good thing. We think that that exercise for the rest of the body is a good thing. So I think that we should start basically teaching mental health in grade school, just like we did diet. You know, I mean, I remember being in school and we were told we're supposed to eat an apple a day and all that kind of thing. We need to start practicing the same thing. And I think as a society, we would be more aware of what it looks like when somebody has a mental illness. And even the phrase mental illness kind of has a stigma as if, you know, you don't fit this criteria. There's something wrong with you, as in it's almost like a moral issue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, the mind is where the emotions are. The brain is where the emotions are. If you've got a bad, you know, you got bad blood flow, we look at your heart.
Yep.
If you've got bad emotions, we look at your brain. And I just wish that we would start from
sure.
the bottom up.
And removing stigma.
Society.
Yeah, removing the stigma.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jimmy. That's Jimmy in Jacksonville. Jonathan Hereford, your brother Sean's diagnosis of schizophrenia. How do you feel stigma negatively affected your desperate struggle to get him some help and keep your mom safe and everything you've had to deal with?
I don't know if it was a stigma in dealing with the legal and the court system, but it was more of a just advocating to get some good help for him. But I like what that first caller just said about changing the culture. We really do. The mind is a powerful thing, and it's connected to our health.
Denise Marzullo, JCCI's inquiry into mental health deals with that they're releasing a position paper about this year. It deals with this problem of stigma and why stigma might be part of the reason that we don't adequately fund this public health issue.
Absolutely. So there's a whole committee focused on awareness. And I've got to say, articles like what Derek wrote, they told the story of a person and their family's struggle with mental illness. It really helps with that. The Hereford family could have been the Marzullo family, could have been Derek's family, could have been anybody's family. Mental illness certainly doesn't discriminate. And so telling that story is so powerful. Doing shows like this, being on the news, sharing education information, normalizing that it is an illness is really important. I think that, and I'm just guessing, but the stigma that might have affected Jonathan's family came from Sean in that he didn't understand his illness, and so he was very reluctant to take his medication. So he probably grew up thinking, no, mentally ill people are those people over there, and didn't want to be one of, quote unquote, those people. And so
yeah.
that definitely affects people living with a mental illness.
Derek.
Too often the media plays a slight role in this, or maybe even a large role. Oftentimes we write about the negative with mental illness. It might paint the picture of, although the story needs to be told about what happened with Sean and Jonathan and Jeanette, it's the very extreme case. Mm-hmm. There are most cases of people suffering from mental illness do not end up with them killing their mothers. It's actually largely suicide is ultimately where it usually goes.
Yeah.
Correct.
But I think it's fair to say it takes an extreme case to get people's attention, sadly, and lots of calls. Let's go to Travis in St. Nicholas. Hi, Travis. Good morning. Go ahead.
Morning. Oh, my God. Forget it.
Okay, Travis, thanks. Anyway, let's go to Paul in Avondale. Hi, Paul. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. The word funding keeps propping up in this discussion, and where should the money come from? I have an idea. Our governor and the legislature, they boast a lot about cutting taxes. Cutting taxes is a wonderful thing, but it also can result in not having enough money to provide the very, very necessary social services. As an example, cutting the price of car registrations. This results in each Florida resident who drives a car getting a few dollars a month, pennies a year, returned to them. But if this money were pooled, aggregated, it results in millions. This could fund a lot of mental health programs. I think a lot of pressure should be put on our governor and the state legislature to modify their constant drumbeat about cutting taxes, which very, very often is geared toward the business community. I think funding mental health programs would be very economical. It would cut the murder rate, because a lot of people who commit crimes are schizophrenic. Take them off the street, treat them. Mental health facilities and hospitals need not be snake pits. With the proper funding, they could be humane and give very valuable treatment to people who really need it.
Thanks.
Those are my comments.
Thank you, Paul. That's Paul in Avondale. Jonathan Hereford, you've become reluctantly an advocate for better funding and better awareness. How, when you hear these calls for reform, how do you respond?
Very pleased that so many people are for a reform and willing to stand up and really want to get their voices heard. And I've had an overpour of support from my friends and family throughout these last months, and more so over the last weekend with Derek's piece. And it's a step in the right direction.
Now, Denise, as Derek reported, Florida spends about $200 million a year on just 1,700 beds, serving about 3,000 people like Sean Hereford, who have been deemed incompetent or a danger to themselves or others. In your view, that is not an efficient way to spend taxpayer money.
Not at all. So while it might sound good in words, what that really means is that people who are at the state hospital are being taught how to reform or to reinstate their competency. So they're taught what it means to go to court, what it means to plead guilty or not guilty. So what that money is spent on is trying to get their competency back. Unfortunately, what happens is once they finally regain their competency, which is a basic level of understanding of the process, very little about treatment, they then are released back into the jail where a court date is set. It often takes 3 to 4 months to get that court date. Their competency then goes backwards, and so their competency by the time they get to the court appearance is not restored. It's back to where it was. So then we send them back to the state hospital, and that oftentimes happens at least 3 to 4 times per person. And so it's not an effective system. It's not working at all.
So Derek, what would be an effective system given that in the 70s America shut down its state-run mental hospitals due to stories like yours, looking at abuse and problems with the system? We were supposed to go to a different system of care, and then for a number of reasons, this nation never did that. Now we have jails basically serving as mental health facilities.
Right. I don't know the exact solution to solving the whole system. It would maybe the Community Mental Health Act should have. They did never built half the facilities. They called for hundreds of facilities to be built. They only built half of them, and they never fully funded even a single one of them. That might be the solution. But back to the competency thing with the fact that basically at any point, if a person is deemed unable to be restored to competency, they could be put into a mental health facility for the length of their charges, basically. For Sean's brother, that's attempted murder, murder, and that would he be in life in a mental health facility. But you could stop this whole process, and according to at least my reading of the statutes, you could take him and say, okay, he's not going to be restored. We're going to put him in a mental facility. But the fact is, are there even those facilities that exist?
Jonathan, tell us about where your brother Sean's facility, where he is today.
It's in state facility out in Chattahoochee right now, and it's better than him being in jail. And Denise hit it on the head. I'm trying to prevent that cycle from happening for him. And part of the problem, my mother and I, for years, were trying to get my brother help. And unfortunately, now that he committed or is accused of committing murder, that's the way the system views him first. So it's very cart before the horse kind of analogy there. But so I'm just trying to advocate for as much as possible, whether these things don't exist yet, maybe with these committees and what we're doing can help institute something, but it's just not there right now.
In a moment, we'll talk about the next steps for this in a big symposium coming up, but right now let's go to Tom on the West Side. Hi, Tom. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Yes, ma'am. My comment is just this. One of the big problems in the mental health system as is you have a crazy quilt of different agencies that are providing services, and this can be very difficult even for a high-functioning person to navigate. And for someone with low-functioning, with particularly bad mental illness, it's probably impossible to navigate all the systems. Oh, and one other quick thing. Your panelist is right, and your caller wrong in terms of the schizophrenics and violence. They are much more likely to be the victims of violence than to be committers of violence.
Right. Thanks, Tom. Denise Marzullo, let's talk about the next steps. As we learned through Derek's reporting, several bills were filed by members of our own Duval delegation regarding this issue. They didn't make it all the way through the process. You'll try again in the legislature, and there's an event coming up that we want to tell people about.
Correct. So we're at Mental Health America. We're coordinating a statewide advocacy effort, bringing together mental health professionals, advocates, families, consumers to really kind of have an effect on the 2016 legislative session. So next week, August 25th and 26th, we're hosting the Florida Mental Health Summit, where we at the Hyatt in downtown Jacksonville, where we're bringing together the elected officials, Representative McBurney from our area and Representative Kathleen Peters from the 69th District are coming, and they're going to speak on a panel with lots of other experts to talk about what happened in 2015 and what they see as what we can do as a community to impact the 2016 legislative session. So they're going to give lots of tips. Judge Lifeman is going to be coming. He's going to be a keynote to point out some efforts that we can take. So hopefully by the end, we will have crafted our legislative priorities for mental health for the 2016 legislative session. So I look at what happened in 2015 as we kind of put the ladder up, and now we need to start taking the right steps to identify some best practices that are going on throughout the state. I mean, we have 12 breakout sessions bringing leaders from all around the state together to really figure out what are the priorities and how to move those forward. And thank goodness we have Representative McBurney, Representative Peters, who are leaders when it comes to the Florida House of Representatives in making sure that mental health related bills are not only filed, but that they're correct. They're listening to the experts. They're letting the experts draft the legislation so that it's not a Band-Aid. It's a systems change. And that's really important.
And when it comes to being proactive about this issue, here's a tweet from Mabel listening in. She says, is there a way to look at early detection? How can parents start early monitoring of the behavior of their children? That's an interesting theoretical question for you, Jonathan. With the benefit of hindsight, when you look at your brother Sean, knowing what you now know, what advice do you have for parents who have a child who might have a mental illness?
Derek listed some good references and resources, but you've just, as a family member, you got to continue to fight. And just what we've been talking about today, the current system, regardless of if it's a private mental hospital or behavioral hospital, there's only a certain amount of time people can be in these places, kind of bed space, money, insurance. So it's a very complicated network of issues, but you got to continue to do the right thing and fight for your family.
Derek Gilliam, let's close with you. For people that didn't get the chance to read your article, go to jacksonville.com, everyone, and read it. And then for people who do need additional support, where should they turn?
There's several resources in the community. My understanding is you really, if you don't have insurance, though, it's not very likely you're going to be able to get much help. The community mental health providers, it's just very hard. So
it's tough. Denise Marzullo, insurance is a related issue. But so many people listening right now have a loved one or a friend or a coworker, someone that they'd like to help. What do you advise them to do?
So get educated. The MHA JAKS, MHAJAX.org is our website. It has lots of information, lots of screening, anonymous screening instruments that they can fill out to see if, you know, they might be struggling. And I would add, too, with the children's piece, the Jacksonville System of Care Initiative is doing a lot of work of cross-collaboration with psychiatrists and primary care physicians to try to help with access issues and stuff. And so pediatricians in Jacksonville are very well educated, are starting to get even more so, and are doing a lot of screenings thanks to the system of care efforts. So definitely go to your pediatrician if you're concerned about your child, and they can help you. But for adults living with a mental illness, Derek's right, there's very little in our community, and that's because of funding. It's not because people don't want to provide the services. The mental health professionals desperately want to provide the services. It's just very difficult when you're 49th out of 50 states in mental health funding. And so, but definitely start with our website. We're going to have a directory soon of mental health professionals that is searchable by insurance and all of that. So get educated.
We'll have this on our website later today as well, wjctnews.org. In the meantime, thanks so much to Derek Gilliam, reporter with the Florida Times Union, Jonathan Herford, and Denise Marzullo, all joining us in studio of an important discussion. So thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And much more still ahead on the show. Later, a look at after-school programs around town. As kids head back to class, we'll tell you about your options. But up next, it's the book club day on the show, and today we are picking your favorite Blix. What's that? It's a book made into a movie. Our book club blogger, Stacey Goldring, made up that word, and she's up next.
The pangolin looks like a small armored anteater. Primarily found in Africa and Asia, it's now facing extinction.
They are finding crates filled with pangolin scales, you know, entire boats with bags of live or frozen and dead pangolins that are being taken from the wild.
Pangolins in Peril, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Weekdays at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
If you love All Things Considered, consider joining us a few hours early for Afternoons on WJCT. The Takeaway offers a fresh way to look at the news, featuring critical conversations, reports from the field, and listener participation. That's followed by The World, with engaging voices to illuminate what's going on around the globe and why it matters to you. It's the smart way to spend your afternoons. Weekdays from 2 to 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First is proud to present the 4th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire teachers. Saturday, September 12th at the Hyatt Regency Riverfront Hotel. Tickets are only $30. Spend the day sharing ideas with colleagues, learning new ways to engage students, and empowering yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets now. WJCT.org/teach.
Well, whether it's the classic Gone with the Wind or a more modern hit like the Hunger Games franchise, Hollywood has a long tradition of making movies out of best-selling books. This morning, our First Coast Connect book club is talking about our favorite Blix. Yes, that's a book that's been turned into a movie. You know, book, flick. What's your favorite? Call us up now as we welcome book club leader Stacey Goldring. And you made up a new word.
I did.
Kudos to you.
Thank you. You know, if you can't find one around, you just make up your own, right?
That's right. So you have a list of your favorite Blix, and I can't wait to hear it.
I do. But first, I want to thank everyone last month who participated in the To Kill a Mockingbird book discussion that we had down at the beautiful Main Library. Thank you to all of you out there. It was a fabulous discussion.
Let's also, once again, give our props to the Main Library, the whole library system in Jacksonville, which has partnered with you and WJCT on our First Coast Connect Book Club. Anything Stacey recommends, the library will have it stocked on the shelf.
They will. And, you know, it'd be nice to have those libraries open 24 hours a day, wouldn't it?
How about that?
Knowledge to the people.
I know, right?
Okay, so you cannot possibly get to all the Blix out there, but we are going to try. So first of all, I want to tell you about some fun upcoming ones. And then I'll go through my list and you'll just, you know, make that gesture like kill yourself and then I'll stop. How's that? Frankenstein is coming out by, you know, by Mary Shelley.
Sure.
And Daniel Radcliffe plays the Hunchback. And I won't say his name because I mix it up with Young Frankenstein with Gene Wilder, because I want to say either Igor or Igor. I always mess it up. But anyway, so Harry Potter will have the lead role.
In very Frankenstein, fun. Very nice.
And then James McAvoy is Dr. Frankenstein. And I know that's a famous person. That's all I know. So that's coming out in November. Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, a fabulous YA by Ransom Riggs. Tim Burton directing, so that's going to be super cool. The Price of Salt by Patricia Highsmith, one of my favorite authors.
Oh, she wrote The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Yeah, she did the Ripley series, and also Strangers on a Train.
The classic Hitchcock.
Yes, and
They're remaking that?
No, but she wrote that.
Oh, okay.
And it was not a good thing when it came out. Not happy, Patricia. Not happy with Alfred. We won't go into it, but it's still a fabulous movie. Also, Madame Bovary. It may be out in Jacksonville now. It may not. But Flaubert gave us vision binoculaire. And that is a term I did not make up. But it means, as a reader, you can look at two things going on at once. And it's a fun word to say.
Oh, very
vision
nice.
Binoculaire.
So these are all Blix that are coming out.
Yes, along with Le Petit Prince, The Little Prince by Saint-Exupéry.
And that's already been made into a film.
It has, but now it's being remade into a much better one.
Oh,
with
excellent.
Voices, Paul Rudd, James Franco, Marianne Cotillard. She was in the Paris movie with the Woody Allen thing. Jeff Bridges, Ricky Gervais, we all love him.
Oh, what a cast.
Albert Brooks.
So who, now, let's hear your list of all-stars, your favorite books that have been made into movies.
Well, you know how I love The Godfather.
So let's start with The Godfather.
Okay, then we have, of course, GWTW, Gone with the Wind.
Of course.
Right? But here are some other ones that I adore. A Christmas Carol, based on the book In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash by Gene Shepherd. That's played, you know, over and over again, Christmas Eve, my birthday. And here's some
other... Your birthday's Christmas Eve?
It is. My first fashion accessory was a red ribbon with cellophane tape plopped on the top of my forehead.
Now, before you go down your list, what do you think about the criticism over Gone with the Wind, the film, in terms of how it dealt with the issues of race and slavery?
Look, it came out in 1937.
Yeah. So you take it for what it was then.
You must look at things in terms of the culture in which it was created. That's basically my line when we get to criticizing things with our 21st century sensibilities. You just can't do it. It's putting square hole in a round peg. All right. So we have the Janes. Jane Austen books and Jane Eyre, Wuthering Heights, all fabulous movies, black and white, BBC, color, et cetera, fabulous. Roots by Alex Haley.
Oh, I didn't, but that was a TV movie.
Okay, those are Blixettes.
It still counts.
It's a Blixette. Wolf Hall, Blixette.
It still counts.
Okay. The Bourne series, didn't read it, but I know other people have.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even think of that.
Right.
The Bourne series.
Yeah, by Robert Ludlum.
Excellent call.
Okay, Da Vinci Code. All right, this is cotton candy, but we love it.
You know.
Not so much.
I liked the Da Vinci Code book a lot better than I liked the film,
Me
I must
too.
Say.
A little dark, like literally I couldn't see it. dark.
Yeah.
All right, so whatever. We like, isn't Tom Hanks in it? He's a nice man. Okay, the Gatsby movies with Redford and the other guy, Leonardo
yes. DiCaprio.
I haven't seen that one yet.
It was better than the one with Redford and Mia Farrow, I thought.
Oh, okay.
You know, Baz Luhrmann, brilliant director.
Okay, I'm willing to give
candy.
It a shot.
Eye candy. Yeah, okay. It's fun to watch.
Okay, all the Stephen Kings. Shawshank, Shining. The Stand was an awful movie.
They all start with S.
Yes, I love that. Very good. And The Stand, which was like the scariest book I ever read, but the worst
movie. That was
a
TV movie.
Oh, so awful.
I remember Rob Lowe was actually in that.
It was so bad. Rob Lowe, he was in the S.E. Hinton movie, I think The Outsiders.
That was his first movie.
Yeah, remember
Coppola
that?
Film.
Yeah, Rumblefish.
Now that's another good book, because that was a beloved young adult book made into a classic film.
Yeah, yeah. And how about Life of Pi?
Mm-hmm.
What was in the boat? Okay, we also have Their Eyes Were Watching God by our own Zora Neale Hurston. And Atonement by Ian McEwan.
Fabulous. That came out just a few years
ago. Yeah, fabulous. That's another one. What just happened? Jude the Obscure and also Far from the Madding Crown. I haven't seen that one yet. Both by Thomas Hardy. Fabulous books.
You have a very literary list of blicks here, young lady.
Oh, really? Okay, then let's talk about this one then. Let's talk about The Mambo Kings by Oscar Hiwelos.
Sure.
That's what we call a blick with kicks because it's hot. Okay, also, Gigi came out in 58, and that was a book written by Colette. Now, I have not seen Gigi, but
I... With Audrey Hepburn?
Yes, but I have read Cherie and The Last... or Mon Cherie, whatever, The Last Cherie by Colette. Those are hot.
This is a very good list.
Yeah, Age of Innocence...
Sure, by Edith Wharton.
Yeah, steamy.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's okay. A great movie.
Right. Okay, so we also have The Razor's Edge and The Painted Veil, recently redone by W. Somerset Maugham.
Bill Murray went really dark in The Razor's Edge, and it's very polarizing. Some people love it, some people don't.
Watch The Black and White Guy. That's the much better. That movie, much better. Much better.
All right, do you want to hear my list?
Yeah, go.
Okay. At the top of the list, hands down, no question, best blicks of all time.
Go ahead.
Without a doubt, The Silence of the Lambs.
Oh my God, you like scary movies.
That is the best book-to-movie adaptation
really?
I think I have
you
ever
seen. You like scary
seen.
Movies? I did not realize.
No, I don't like horror movies. I like that movie because
so well
it was so excellent.
With Jodie Foster.
And I love Jodie Foster. Jonathan Demme directed comedies up until that point and
wow.
then made this incredibly... dense, layered, psychological thriller. I love the movie not because it's scary, but because of the character development and the way, if you read that book and then you saw the movie, he did an excellent job of developing the characters on the screen in the same way that they were developed in the book.
And that makes a really good film. You know, I only saw the upper right-hand corner of that movie because I was like this.
I know, it's terrifying.
Go ahead, get more. And do we had an email from...
yes, we do.
Forget,
here's an email from Phyllis emailing the book club. My favorite blicks is The Martian by Andy Weir. I love space and science fiction. I've already read the book and I'm looking forward to the upcoming film starring Matt Damon.
That'll be good.
Yeah,
because
he's
a great actor. The Remains of Day by Kazuo Ishiguro. That's fabulous.
Yep.
Go ahead.
All right. Here's the rest of my list. Chariots of Fire.
Oh, wow.
Based on a book about the Olympics. It was a factual account of that year at the Olympics. And they
This is the 70s, right?
Yes. And okay. But Chariots of Fire came out in 1981.
Oh, it was 81. Okay.
And people remember it for the Vangelis score, but it was actually a Blix.
I did not know that.
Yes.
This is awesome. Okay, go on.
Children of Men, starring my husband, Clive Owen. Just kidding. love that movie. Came out in 2006. That's a Blix that
okay.
I loved.
Oh, I'm getting such great recommendations.
The Unbearable Lightness of Being about the Prague Spring, starring Daniel Day-Lewis.
Fabulous. That's Kudrow, I think, wrote that. Yeah.
Empire of the Sun, Spielberg.
Yeah, that was...
Christian Bale was a little boy in that movie when he played the little boy who became a prisoner of war.
Right, right. Oh, beautifully done.
Apocalypse Now.
I'm telling you, you like these gut-wrenchers.
Apocalypse Now is a Blix.
Yeah, yeah.
The Big Sleep, Raymond Chandler, with Bogey and
Bacall. Oh, classic.
Okay. Trainspotting, Ewan McGregor.
That's right.
That was made from a book. I love that movie.
Oh, my goodness.
And last but not least, my kids love this movie,
believe it or not.
The Shining.
Red Rum.
Yep, Red Rum.
So scary.
That was a book.
That's right. That's right.
So that's my list.
Oh, I've learned a lot about you. You go deep.
But you got some more emails about this, didn't you?
I did. Someone wrote in that they really disliked... let's see, Hastings wrote in that they loved the book A Prayer for Owen Meany, but hated
that's one of my dad's
movie,
favorite books. Yeah,
Simon
that movie.
Birch.
That movie.
What happened there?
Dropped the ball. But see, this goes to the idea that it's difficult to adapt it a is. Book into a great movie.
It really is. But let's go down to Agatha Christie's Blixettes. Anne Blix, fabulous. And you know, we are women of a certain age, and we need mysteries because it's good for the little gray cells. It's good for our brain.
Oh, is it? Well, yes, so we're going to ward off Alzheimer's with this exercise. Okay,
One
that's good.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest by Ken Kesey, fabulous book. Obviously, Mockingbird, goes without saying, with Gregory Peck. The House of Spirits by Isabel Allende, very scary. Glenn Close, I believe, is in that. And here's like a cocktail I'm going to give you. You can read Mrs. Dalloway by Virginia Woolf or not, because it's kind of weird if you're not used to that kind of reading. And then you can rent the really awful movie, Mrs. Dalloway, which is basically about a woman preparing for a party and the horrors of World War I. However, do that, but then you get the best part of the cocktail, the olive, because you watch The Hours by Michael Cunningham, which is a riff on Dalloway, and it's so beautifully done. It'll just knock your socks off.
That was with Nicole Kidman
and
Virginia Woolf,
and
right?
Julianne Moore, I believe.
Julianne Moore, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's an excellent but only partial list of incredible Blix. Thanks for making up a new word, Stacey Goldring.
You're welcome.
And visit any branch of the Jacksonville Public Library, especially the main library, to learn more about our First Coast Connect book club.
Let me tell you real quick what we have going on next month. A Rose by Any Other Name. So you can go two ways with this one. You can read any Shakespeare you'd like, or try one of these title switcheroos. The High Bouncing Lover, otherwise known as Gatsby. The Last Man in Europe, otherwise known as 1984. Or Joseph Heller's Catch 11, 18, or Catch 22. So we're going to talk about books that almost were named.
Oh,
A Rose by Any Other Name.
Very good. I can't wait. We'll
Me
see you
either.
Next month.
Yep.
And we're back in a moment.
Listeners love Relax Radio.
My name is Harry Reagan. I got hooked immediately because it's just the kind of radio station I've always been looking for and never found until now.
When you make a $120 gift to WJCT, you'll receive an HD radio so you can tune in to Relax. Call 904-353-9528 or go online to wjct.org/relax for more information.
Follow what's happening at WJCT even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
Back when swing was America's popular music, jazz was music you danced to. Then a drummer named Max Roach came along and changed everything.
Max Roach is the voice and architect of modern jazz drumming.
Drummer Ali Jackson pays a tribute to the great Max Roach at Jazz and Lincoln Center. I'm Christian McBride, and that's coming up on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, less than a week till students in Duval head back to class. And the Jacksonville Children's Commission has dozens of after-school programs for parents to choose from this school year. They offer a safe, healthy place for kids, primarily in underserved neighborhoods, to do their homework, develop skills, and more. CEO John Heyman here now to tell us all about it. Hey, John.
Hey, how you doing, Melissa?
So before we talk about after school, let's talk about summer camp. You just came off a great summer.
Yes, we did. We did. And by the way, before I continue, I heard your previous segment. You said one of your favorite books and movies was Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, that's at the top of my list.
Oh, my gosh, it is for me, too.
I know, right?
We're both sick people. Anyhow, I'm just kidding. Yeah, we had fantastic summer camps. We had 6,700 children, the most Jacksonville has ever served in its history, thanks to the agreement of the city council. 6,700 kids, 8 to 5 every single day. They were not being recruited for gangs. They were not getting in trouble, and no trouble was being committed on them. Very, very successful.
That's, kudos. That's wonderful. So as you make the transition from summer to fall, parents needing a good after-school program for their kids can turn to the JCC.
Absolutely. On our website, jackskids.net, there's a locator tool, and they can actually click on it and see the list of after-school programs. We are in 49 schools and 21 community centers. Many of them, again, we fund it. The great nonprofits do it, like Communities and Schools, Boys and Girls Club, Community Connections, Tony Baselli, Malavia Washington Carpenter Shop. There's an amazing group of nonprofits here in Jacksonville.
And so when you collaborate, you're setting up a space. Some parents call this extended day. It's after school. Kids can do homework. There's extracurricular activities. They're in a safe place. They're that prime window of time from 3 to 6 p.m. when a lot of older kids might be getting into trouble. You're giving them something constructive and empowering to do.
Absolutely. It is 3 hours. Sometimes extended day is only one, but our programs are 3 hours. And our desire is that kids be educated, safe, and healthy. So we work on all three of those things. We hire certified teachers to do the academic portion, and then we hire community folks to do the additional 2 hours of cultural enrichment.
And in particular, you have 5 new sites to talk about this year.
Yes,
five
we
new
do.
Schools.
Yes, Windy Hill, Jacks Heights Elementary, Ramona, San Jose and Hyde Park are the two brand new for this year as well. Yep.
But what's important to point out is that the Jacksonville Children's Commission makes a point of providing programs and services in the city's toughest neighborhoods.
Well, yes, but it is my belief. I mean, remember, Melissa, all the Columbines and Newtowns did not happen in the poor areas of our cities. So it is my belief that regardless of income, we ought to have after-school programs for every child in the city. And we don't have that right now, but we're getting there.
And more funding, more partners are needed to get there.
Absolutely. More funding, more partners.
You want to put the call out to those listening. This would be an opportunity to help the Children's Commission in a really concrete way.
Very concrete. First of all, these programs are crime prevention, but they're also economic development. I want the children to read. I want them to graduate high school, go to college, and come back and take our jobs, or maybe your job.
Probably sooner than we think. But it's jackskids.net, jackskids.net. To learn more, so someone just now listening to this and they want to find a program for their child, they can look at your list.
Yes, they can. They can go to our I think it's a green button that says find the site on our website, and they can find which one is closest to them.
Anything else parents need to know to sign up?
No, they're free. The camps are the summer camps were free as well, but the after-school programs are free.
Can't
so
beat
to
that.
Find, no, that's a very affordable rate.
Yeah, this is a free service for parents in Duval County, an after-school program for your child, the Jacksonville Children's Commission, with 70 sites across town. Sign your child up now at jackskids.net. I can't believe school is less than a week away.
1 week away, 125,000 students going to school.
Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And next on Diane Rehm, sentencing laws have been filling U.S. prisons with nonviolent drug offenders for decades now. The White House has made reform a priority, and there's bipartisan support. Proposals for criminal justice reform in the U.S., that's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.